everybody. Welcome to Unscripted Wrestling. We got a special episode for you tonight. Did I mention it was special? We got a lot going on. WCW Company Retrospective. This is our first company retrospective that we're doing. We've been looking forward to doing this for a while. This is part one of our WCW-AEW comparison trilogy. So keep checking in the next coming weeks, and we're going to keep hitting you with that. This week we'll be doing WCW from 1996 to 1998. We're going to be talking about the whole era, the NWO era, WCW, the top guys, the top angles, the shitty guys, the mid-carders. We're going to just try to delve into it all in a brief period of time. Joining me today are my fabulous co-hosts and some of my best friends on this planet, my brother Doug.
Yo.
My close confidant Eric.
What up?
And the founder of is it still Figure Four? No.
Wrestling Fan Club.
And the founder of Wrestling Fan Club, our friend Stevie.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, how you doing tonight, man?
Good. How are you?
Can't complain. Before we get into all that, we're not really going to get into news today since we have a big show. But we will go to Doug with the plugs.
Okay, make sure you listen to Boxman and Smart, the Dirt Sheet Dudes, for the Dirt Sheet Dudes podcast, Wednesdays, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Our very own Eric was on there this past Wednesday night. Eric, that was a fabulous
job
you did on the show.
Thank you. I'll be back on next week. I might make this a weekly thing if I'm off on Thursday, so.
You're cheating on us.
From you on Wednesday night.
It's called good exposure.
Yeah, that too.
That's the kind of exposure I keep getting busted for. but so check that out then. Eric will be on with the Dirt Sheet Dudes on Wednesday nights for the Dirt Sheet Dudes podcast around 10:15, 10:20 Eastern Time. And Friday nights, the dudes will be around for Hollywood Hangout. And it's 11:30 on Fridays, right, Eric?
No, 9:30 Eastern Time.
On Friday?
That was just a one-time thing.
Okay. All right, and tonight's movie that Box is doing is Urban Cowboy, correct?
Yep. I think he's doing it by himself, possibly.
So listen to that. Urban Cowboy is actually a really good movie. So listen to Box talk about that. And Box knows his movies.
Yes, he does.
All right. Listen to us, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday night. On Friday nights for the Unscripted Wrestling Podcast. Obviously, tonight is the WCW Company Retrospective. Next week will be the AEW Company Retrospective. 2 weeks from tonight, we're going to get away from the Company Retrospective for a week, and we're going to talk about the October 9th, 2000 episode of Monday Night Raw,
yes,
where we discover who ran over Stone Cold Steve Austin and who he did.
Can't wait for that one.
The Rock.
And then 3 weeks from tonight will be the AEW WCW 96 through 98 comparison show.
Head-to-head.
And that's going to be fun.
Yes.
And then October 22nd, we will be here counting down the top 20 greatest wrestlers of all time. Eric has put
that's
a lot of work into this list. Huh?
That's going to be very controversial.
Oh, I'm sure it's going to be very controversial. You know, we'll get into it in the coming weeks. But so listen to that. Boxman is going to be joining us for that episode, right, Eric?
Yes, he is.
Which I did not know that until I heard Boxman say it on his show the other day.
Yeah, because I had to do a cheap plug because it was 1 month from that date that the list of our show was going to be. So.
Right. No, I got you. All right. Also, tomorrow at about, we'll say about 7 p.m. Eastern time, join Eric and I for Unscripted Unlimited. Daniel's getting another night off because he's got business to attend to. So Eric and I will be talking on Scripted Unlimited. We'll be previewing the UFC 266 card. We're going to be also going to be reviewing Big Brother. We're going to be talking other stuff. I got a toy spotlight. I do have a cartoon spotlight, which, Eric, I'll text you what cartoon you're going to be watching. I need you to watch, you know, after we're done here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And NFL spotlight, too.
All right. Cool. Look
Josh
forward
Allen.
To that. Awesome. Make my boss listen to that. But, all right, and then Sunday, 3 p.m. Eastern time for the Scaredy Cats. What are you guys doing on Sunday?
What are we doing?
Yeah.
A horror movie franchise tier list.
Oh, that ought to be good.
Yeah.
Okay. And then NFL Hard Hits. I'm probably
NFL Wednesday. Hard Hits. Are you guys, no, you guys aren't doing Tuesday, right, because you have to go to a prison dinner?
Yeah, we're not doing Tuesday. We'll if Clinton is available on Wednesday, we'll do Wednesday. If not,
okay.
Then I guess we'll skip it this week. I don't know. I've
okay.
talked to my colleague.
All right. And then that's usually run at, what, about 6 p.m., 6:30?
7 p.m.
That was close. And then also check out Daniel's friend Sean on YouTube with his gaming channel and roller hockey videos, Elite Diplodocker.
Yeah. And on Twitch is Sneaky Fetty.
So
check him out.
Give him a watch. He's a really good gamer. He's a good guy.
Great.
Tremendous hockey player.
Well,
now, Daniel, are you still starting your own Twitch?
I am thinking about it. I definitely, because my buddy just got an Xbox too, so we're thinking about making some gaming content and also maybe doing some of this stuff, extra stuff on Twitch. So I'm thinking about it, but nothing's set in stone yet. But it's exciting. So.
Yeah, a lot of exciting things going on this podcast network in the coming weeks.
Yes, but now that's done. Let's get into it. We've been looking forward to this for a while now. I've been watching more WCW than I think I can even handle. This is all I've been watching pretty much, at least at night, for the past 2 weeks. And I'm ready to get into it. Stevie. How big of a period was 1996 through 1998 for WCW? Just with the NWO and, you know, the rise of Goldberg and Sting, how big was that period of time, do you think?
During that time, I think it was huge for them. Especially with the NWO and the Four Horsemen feuding in that 96 era. So I think it was, like, really huge for the company altogether.
Yeah. I'd have to agree. I got a bit of a roadmap in my head, guys. We're going to be talking about a lot of different stuff. We're going to be going through a couple different things. I do want to kind of get your basic thought about this 2 years period of time, Doug, because this really meant a lot to the company. It's the only time the company turned profit. What do you think was so special about this 2 years?
So you got to remember too what they were coming off of. You know, you're still in that Hogan versus Dungeon of Doom era,
which was not well received.
No, it wasn't well received at all. But the Dungeon of Doom, if you really think about it, like, if you go into, like, who was in the Dungeon of Doom, you had, obviously, the Giant, who was billed as Andre the Giant's son, but spoiler alert, he's not. But he was also somebody that Hogan kind of brought in, because Hogan met him at a charity basketball game. You had Kevin Sullivan, obviously, who was the booker of WCW at the time, who was the leader, who's the Taskmaster. And then you had the following guys in the group. The Zodiac. who's Ed Leslie, who's Hogan's best friend. The Shark, who at one time was Earthquake, somebody Hogan drew a lot of money with. Yeah. Kamala was in it for a short period of time. Kamala drew money with Hogan back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Right? Ming, you know, Haku, one of Hogan's best friends. Or one of Hogan's close friends.
So, saying all that, do you think that this period is the best creative period of WCW? Just with the storylines, entertainment, not just matches, because they've had a lot of good shit, you know, especially NWA and the 92 WCW, even though it was, that wasn't really well received. Some of the wrestling's really good. Do you think creatively that this is one of the better periods for WCW?
Starting in 96 with the NWO?
Yeah.
Yes, because you're coming off something, you're coming off gimmicks that really, like, they didn't work. Because remember, too, when NWO started, I mean, Johnny B. Badd started off as a really good gimmick.
Yeah.
And then Bischoff realized, he's like, there's not much more I could do with the guy because, you know, we un-Little Richard him.
Yeah.
You know, Vader's gone. So now it's just like, okay, so with the NWO, creatively, yes, it was very well done. And, like, the way they did some of the stuff with the NWO, like the attack at Disney.
Yeah.
When they attacked, you know, Arn Anderson and Rey Mysterio. Well, no, the way they had Arn Anderson laying down and Mark Bagwell and what they did to Rey Mysterio.
Yeah.
Scotty Riggs got knocked out for 20 minutes with a fucking trash can lid. You know, except for, like, that part of it, because that just looked very – it didn't even look like they hit him.
Yeah.
Except for that part, like, that whole beating was, you know, cool, right?
Yeah.
So, like, the way they did that, the way they orchestrated that, the way they orchestrated, like, a lot of the members joining. So, yes, it was a great creative period, I think, because also, too, not only did you have that, yes, that was the main storyline, but you also had a good list of supporting characters.
Yeah.
A
great list, yeah. So far.
Yeah, because you had guys that were starting to come up, you know, like a Diamond Dallas Page and Eddie Guerrero, you know,
Chris
Benoit, Jericho was coming in, Malenko was coming in, Ray, you know, you had an excellent tag team division with the Steiners, Harlem Heat, the Nasties, Public Enemy, Faces of Fear, when the Canadians came in, the American Males. High Voltage.
Yeah.
Buck and Enos. You had a lot of people, and also remember at the time too, guys, you know, 96, they had Nitro, they had Saturday Night, which were your two main shows.
Yeah.
Then you had Pro, which was Saturday morning. You had Worldwide, which was their syndicated show, and you had Main Event, which was usually in 96, it was their Sunday Night Recap show, but then, you know, Pro and Main Event kind of switched days.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want, Bischoff didn't want to do any more lead-ups to the pay-per-view.
Yeah.
So, like, Main Event, like, got switched, because usually they would use Main Event as, like, a live, like, lead-in.
Right.
But Bischoff changed that. He's like, we don't need a pre-show.
No.
Which I think is stupid. I mean,
they had so many shows, though.
Yeah.
And I think where I'd like to start is probably the biggest feud in WCW history, and that would be between Hulk Hogan and Sting.
Okay.
And the reason I want to start with this, because I think it's not only one of the better forms of long-term storytelling. Payoff sucked, and I think the thing about the payoff. But let's talk about how good the build-up is first, because this storyline was perfectly crafted for about a year, right?
Yeah, about
a year,
15 months.
Yeah.
So a little over a year.
Because it ended. Because it started after Halloween, no, after in 96.
Right before Fall Brawl.
Fall Brawl, yeah.
And it technically
that's the last time we saw Sting, right? Barbara?
Yeah,
because that was when they started the bogus thing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that stuff was just really good. The fact that, because the only thing about WCW, it's Charger, but the only thing about WCW that you could probably, well, there's a lot of things you could say negative, but one of the things is that you could say that the NWO were such cool heels that it shit on a lot of the baby faces. But the thing is, they had stellar baby faces. And even though people were cheering for a Hogan and them, so they were still behind the Lugers. They were still behind Sting. They were still behind the DDPs eventually, and Goldberg, obviously.
And the Steiners.
And obviously the Steiners. Yeah. But Sting, they had a thing. They needed a guy to go up against the NWO and still seem cool. Sting was the embodiment of cool at that time.
Right.
At first, he was this classic white meat baby face. He's just like a better version of the Ultimate Warrior, pretty much, right? That's who Sting is.
Yeah.
He's just exciting. Woo! Like, not Ric Flair woo, but you know how he gets so excited. And he's just a happy white meat baby face. But they turned him – they saw the movie The Crow that we've talked about on the show before. Or we've talked about the lead star of it, at least.
Right.
Brandon Lee. And they saw The Crow. They saw how cool that was. And they kind of – they didn't steal that gimmick, but they very much utilized inspiration from The Crow. Because then you have Sting in the white face paint, the black leather jacket, and he just looks cool. He's got the baseball bat. And all you have to do is have him in the – like, a lot of those Nitros, he would show up for a few minutes, stand in the rafters, look at what's happening, and you're like, oh, shit. And that was them continuing the storyline.
Right. Well, when he first did it – go ahead, Eric.
No, I was going to say, I agree with Daniel.
Yeah, so when they first did it, which the first episode of Nitro where he did the rafters thing – now, he did the whole black and white, and came out, you know, kind of dressed like the Crow, October 21st, 96. Well, on October 28th, that's when he first appeared in the rafters. And Zbyszko and Schiavone are like, wait a minute, that's Sting?
Yeah.
And, you know, he hung out there for a couple weeks. And then, like, when he came down 2 weeks later and he dropped Jeff Jarrett, that's when everybody's starting to think, oh, my God, this guy's part of the NWO.
Yeah.
Now, the fans were okay with him dropping Jeff Jarrett because Jeff Jarrett, even though he was like a main adversary to the NWO, he could not get over.
Yeah.
I mean, he got over like a fart in church.
Yeah, he was having trouble.
So because he wanted to, you know, he wanted to be like Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Like he would not have turned down a Ric Flair helicopter. But for anybody that doesn't know what that means, watch Dark Side of the Ring.
It's very important case, but it's okay.
Yeah. Anyway, so like he was just like, so Jarrett, you know, wasn't necessarily getting over his baby face.
Yeah.
So when Sting dropped him, it's just like, oh my, you know, the fans loved it.
Yeah.
Now when he dropped Rick Steiner, 2 weeks, I think after that.
Yeah.
Well, he dropped Jarrett twice. And then afterwards he dropped Steiner. And that's when the fans are just like, what is he doing?
Yeah.
And then like he dropped those two. And then like they thought he was possibly, you know, kind of getting, no, back in, you know, he was going to go into the NWO. He beat up, he got involved in a fight on Nitro when it was WCW versus NWO. And he punched the horse, Mongo and Arn in the mouth. And then Rey Mysterio jumped on his back and he kind of threw Rey off. And everybody's just like, oh my God, he's NWO. Here's the problem. Here's the thing about that. Arn was a heel. Mongo was a heel. Obviously, Jeff Jarrett wasn't getting over with the fans. Rick Steiner and Rey Mysterio. Mysterio attacked him. Rick Steiner told Sting to be a man, which, you know, kind of hurt Sting's feelings a little bit. The point is that, like, you didn't think you knew if Sting was heel or babyface, but if you look at the pattern, the only time he attacked these people is if, A, they went after him,
yeah,
or B, they talk shit.
So it was all calculated.
Yeah.
And that actually goes to kind of tell you their storytelling, too, and how good it was. Because a lot of people associate Eric Bischoff in this era with sloppy storytelling and with not being able to, you know, and some stuff not making sense. You know, some guys being friends one night and then they beat the shit out of each other the next night out of nowhere and run-ins and all that dumb shit. But this was the perfectly crafted story.
Yeah, this was. And, yeah, you know, it did happen. Like, sometimes you'll see a guy, two guys team up, or like a guy team up in a six-man. Perfect example of that is Clash of Champions in January of 97. Jericho teaming up with Super Cologne and Chavo Guerrero Jr. against Conan, La Parca, and maybe a Viano or Chico Pay or somebody. Jericho, or no, JL, not Chico Pay. Anyway, so Jericho then, 4 days later, on Saturday night, is wrestling Super Cologne.
Yeah.
Okay? So I can kind of get that, but it's also just like, you got to remember too, you know how I talked about, you know, all the shows and all that?
Yeah.
All right. Now, a lot of those shows at the time, except for Nitro and Saturday Night, would kind of get away from it in 96 or 98. I mean, they would still tape like two, but like, you know, back in the days, they would tape like five or six ahead of time. But, you know, then they kind of shorten it. But like the other shows were, again, except for Nitro, was marathon tapings. So you tape like, you know, 2 or 3 months of Pro at a time, 2 or 3 months of Worldwide at a time. You know, the main event exclusive match is like you tape a shitload of them.
Yeah.
And a lot of the times it was whoever was getting used was whoever showed up to the taping. Because a lot of that at that time, you know, you didn't really have to go. I mean, yes, they wanted you to, but like a lot of the times, like the main event stars, like Hogan didn't go to all the TV. I mean, he went to all the Nitros.
Yeah.
He went to all the Nitros, but he didn't. He went to like Pros when he felt like. I mean, he had a home in Orlando. That's why, you know, it was easy for him to get there.
Yeah.
So it's just more along the lines of them booking these shows. It's, okay, who's standing in front of me right now? Okay, JL, I see you. And Alex Wright, I see you. All right, you guys are up first. Go.
Yeah.
Okay, I see Shark over there, and I see Bubba. You two are next. Get behind them, waiting Gorilla.
Yeah.
Okay, do I which tag teams are there? All right, I see Buck and Enos, and oh, Steiners. Okay, you guys are there. All right, you guys are the first tag match of the night.
Right.
All right, you get the point though, right?
Yeah.
That's basically how they ran their tapings.
Yes, but it does translate, and it did make some of the product look a little sloppy. But this wasn't that. Not this feud, because there was a lot of care, a lot of thought put into it. And I want to get your opinion, Eric. What did you think of Hogan and Sting, and did it keep you invested?
Yeah. I mean, this was one of my favorite feuds during this time. I liked how Sting was always in the Raptors. That was pretty cool. That he always looked down every time Hogan went to NWO was in the ring. And NWO looked scared, and they slowly built it. They didn't rush it. They didn't. It wasn't a great finish to the feud, but it had a purpose. And the purpose was Sting getting the belt from Hogan.
Now let's delve into the sloppiness of it, and let's say, let's talk about Starrcade 97.
Before we do that, I just do have to bring up that Bischoff, like especially during this feud with Sting and Hogan, the few times, because he actually took a lot of Sting's death drops.
Yeah.
Like, those were iconic moments because it's just like, oh, my God, yo, this guy, we know he's running the company. And he's willing to give – he was willing to take the bumps before McMahon was.
Yeah, and he was the heel character before McMahon.
Yeah.
He was Vince before Vince.
I really think Bischoff is the trendsetter here.
Yeah. Vince, obviously, better. I mean, I love it. I think Bischoff is a great character, and I loved him around this time. And him is Hogan's, like, shameless lackey holding the microphone and the microphone for him and stuff.
Yeah.
And the fact that, it's like, even the owner embraces the NWO. What the hell are we going to do? I think that made it really good.
Yeah, because, like, he, I think, was more like, you know, McMahon would somehow, like, get outsmarted and stuff. Bischoff, I think, rarely ever got outsmarted. I mean, he got outsmarted a lot of the times when he was dealing with the Horsemen.
But the character was so good that you relate the character to the guy.
Yeah.
People still hate Bischoff just from watching that. And that's how, like, the wrestlers talk about him. He was not Eazy-E. He was not the guy. Like, if you hear him talk and hear some other people talk about him, not Scott Hall. Scott Hall calls him Eazy-E. But he was not the friends with everybody and didn't want to make bad. He wasn't that type of boss. But he betrayed that on TV, and people think that's who he really is because he was so damn good at it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people. Remember, around this period of time, at one time, I'm pretty sure they had over 100 wrestlers on the roster.
Yeah.
Okay? So, and Bischoff wasn't friends with all of them. Bischoff basically was just, okay, I got to sign guys because I have all these TV shows to film.
Yeah.
Because I can't expect Scott Hall to work every show, or I can't expect the Steiners to work every show, or Hogan or Savage or whatever. But getting back to the thing about Sting and Hogan, and you know, you wanted to bring up Starrcade, that whole thing. There are so many ways they could have done it. I mean, I have my theories, obviously. Okay, my main theory is Hogan was planning on, if you, depending on who you listen to, Hogan was going to leave and go back to the WWF. However, and like Starrcade, I think, was going to be like one of his last appearances.
Really?
If you listen to Bruce Pritchard.
Oh.
Okay.
I thought it was a good idea, though.
I think if I'm telling the story the way, you know, Bruce tells it, or not necessarily how he tells it, because he doesn't really talk about Starrcade, but Hogan pretty much, I think, here obviously changed his mind.
Yeah.
Because even Hogan knows, or even Bischoff knows, you're leaving, you need to drop the fucking title.
Yeah.
So the whole story on...
It doesn't make sense that he would leave, though. I feel like Bruce is bullshitting a little bit. They might have had talks, but he was getting paid way better than Vince could have ever paid him in 97.
Well, yeah. I mean, Brett was making the kind of money that Hogan was... Or Brett was supposed to make the kind of money that Hogan was making in WWE. You're supposed to make that in the WWF.
And Vince said, fuck off.
Yeah, Vince basically said, I need to save the money.
Yeah.
So you need to go.
He couldn't afford it. And
exactly.
But, you know, whatever happened, whatever the theory is, Nick Patrick, he counted a regular three count. So it made Sting look like a bum when Hogan beat him clean. It looked like he beat him clean, and then Bret Hart comes out and says, this is bullshit. They reversed the decision. He refs it, right?
Yeah.
And then Sting gets his big victory. It's a great – it's one of the instances where WCW, which is known for the finish gets very fucky at WCW. And this is one of the worst instances because they needed this. And the buildup was better than the payoff, and that's fine. But they needed Sting should have just won clean to begin with. They didn't need to pull all that shit about the fast count. I know it kept up with the story and Nick Patrick was a bastard and all that, but and then just for him to count it clean and fucking, it just made Sting look kind of stupid. And that it's one thing they didn't need. Now, obviously, they kept the streak going because for another year, they're still on top. They're still hot. 83 weeks, maybe. They beat the hell out of WWE this whole period. They started, WWF started winning a little bit in 98, but I'd still say WCW was on top.
Yeah, I don't remember starting to hate their programming until November.
Well, because it really doesn't happen until the finger poke of doom, to me, is when it's like,
yeah.
Oh. And that's like, that's 99, right? Like January? Or is it
January 4th.
Yeah.
And I think what made it worse, I really think what made it worse is not necessarily the finger poked, but the fact that they let people know that Mick Foley won the title.
Yeah.
So, okay. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to tell people Mick Foley won the title, wouldn't you want to have like, well, first of all, you're fucking people over out of the match that you advertised for a week, Nash and Goldberg. Then you're going to have Schiavone say, oh, yeah, Mick Foley's winning the title. And everybody liked Mick Foley.
Yeah.
Then you're going to do this popcorn fart of a match with this finger poke.
Which, by the way, is a big-time match and also a result for some big-time storytelling because this is leader of the Wolfpack, leader of the Black and White.
Right.
This is a big fucking match.
Right. And it, to end it the way the to end it the way they ended it,
it was a blasphemy.
Yeah, and it was really stupid. Now, again, everybody blames Nash. Nash is just like, I was not in charge at this point, which is fucking like, because he even admitted that he was, that he had taken the book in late 98.
Which I don't think his booking was completely awful sometimes. And I don't think him booking himself, like the whole Goldberg, and I was going to save that towards the end because there's a lot of conversation to get out of that. But I don't even think him winning the belt off Goldberg was awful because Nash has always been built as this big dude.
No, I don't have a problem with him winning the title.
But the whole finger poke and then it's like, oh, the belt's back on Hogan and fucking they're all sitting there and they're happy. And then that's when you get the era of these guys really don't give a fuck.
Right.
You get that aura of, oh, these guys don't give a shit. You know, this is just them having fun and getting paid. Before that, 96 through 98, yes, they were having fun beating the shit out of people, but it felt like everybody cared. And it felt like everyone knew they were on top. And they weren't lazy about it, and they wanted to keep working towards it. Around that time, the finger poke, that's when it felt like, we're number one. Fuck it. We can do whatever we want. We don't give a shit.
Yeah.
And that's when it went down. But during this stuff, I think it was incredibly great. I do want to briefly touch on Piper and Hogan, because that main event in Starrcade 96, and it that was a big program for them as well. Do you think continue – and I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I'm going to hand it over to Stevie – do you think, going back to the well, because WCW is known for taking a lot of old WWE stuff and doing it again. Do you think going back to the well in the Piper Hogan feud was a good idea?
No, it wasn't. I mean, they could have just left that in the past and not revisited that. I think that's what hurt them, to go back to that feud. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it hurt them in a way. I mean,
if you look... If you look at it, it made no sense. It made no sense for the company altogether. So why would they do that, though?
Because they wanted a big-time match for Starrcade, because they realized, okay, so...
But that wasn't even for the belt. That's another thing that's like, come on.
Bro. Well, that was the stupid part.
Yeah.
But you look at Starrcade the year before, which was the World Cup of Wrestling.
Yes.
WCW New Japan, which actually would kind of work today, like because New Japan has all these stars and stuff, right? And everybody knows who a lot of these guys are. In 95, you really didn't know any of them because they didn't bring Muda in. I mean, yeah, they brought Liger, but who the fuck is Koji Kanemoto?
Yeah.
Or Otani.
And by the way, it's important to note that Starrcade, us as fans think Starrcade is WCW's WrestleMania. And that's how Dusty Rhodes kind of envisioned it, was that Starrcade was his big spectacle. And a lot of fans think of it as that. Bischoff never thought of it that way. If you hear the man talk, he said, I think one of our biggest events was more like Bash at the Beach or maybe Halloween Havoc or something.
I think he booked Bash at the Beach and Halloween Havoc as his two big ones.
Yeah, he's like, I never thought of Starrcade as like the Mecca, our WrestleMania. He's like, everyone else did, but I just always saw it as another pay-per-view.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. Well,
and he booked it like that, though.
Yeah.
I mean, 94, your main event is Hogan and Butcher.
Yeah. I mean, Sting and Hogan was a big deal, and it was a big storyline for a big event.
I mean, because they finally got back to, like, where it was. Like, Starrcade 96 actually felt important with the Piper Hogan thing.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have just left it at that and all that, but then, like, they had to drag it on. They had to get another match out of it, which was horrible.
Yeah.
Hogan does not have a good track record of good matches at Starrcade.
No.
His 94 match sucked. Luckily, they left him off 95. The 96 match was good.
Yeah, it was good.
The 97 match just, it blew, well, the ending blew.
Yeah.
So, Hogan you should not call Hogan Mr. Starrcade.
No.
Not at all.
I would say that these are the three Starrcades that do feel important, because Piper Hogan felt important, Sting Hogan felt important, and Nash Goldberg very much felt important.
Yeah.
So those three Starrcades, I think, are huge, but there were times where it just felt like another pay-per-view, especially in the latter end of the career thing.
Yeah.
What I do want to talk about is the Cruiserweight division. Eric, name me the top cruiserweight in that division that's not Rey Mysterio, Dean Malenko, or Chris Jericho.
Probably, what's his name? Is that not Chris Jericho, Dean Malenko, or
Rey Mysterio?
And what's his name? It's a Japan guy. Maybe Hoobie.
Hoobie. We got a Hoobie fan in the building. Humberto Guerrero. I would say he was great. I think I would put Eddie Guerrero in that category as well.
Can't forget. I think the biggest, the greatest cruiserweight draw of all time was Super Gallo.
He sucked. My favorite is actually Psychosis. I love Psychosis, but that tells you the variety you had there.
That's what I was going to think of.
Really?
I have one. Yeah. What about the Ultimo Dragon?
Oh, I love him.
And him too,
He's in my top 10 of all time.
Ultimo Dragon.
The great thing about Ultimo was, I mean, and you had it with a lot of the Cruiserweights because they were, Mexican or Japanese. They couldn't really talk. But he was just so intense, and there was something about Ultimo. He really worked for me as a heel, too, because he was great at just beating the shit out of people.
Right. He was a heel, but that's just because he hung out with other bonehead, Sonny Ono.
Yeah.
They had a lot of great, the Japanese wrestlers, the Mexican luchadors, even some of the American guys that competed in the division. Brad Armstrong was a cruiserweight. Benoit was technically considered a cruiserweight.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not American, but Alex Wright.
Yeah.
Six when he was there.
Yeah, Six was important.
Just a lot of those guys were just, they kind of played into, I think especially like 96, 97, when they were really playing on and even a little bit 98 too, when they were playing on like the Mexican trios matches.
Yeah. I love La Parca.
Yeah.
And I mean, I really do think people came for the main events, the Hogans, the Goldbergs, the Nashes, but they really did stay for the Cruiserweights. Because
yeah.
this was some of the best work rates. It wasn't just dudes flying around. It was like art. It was a masterpiece. It was fun to watch.
Oh, it was tremendously fun to watch.
It kept things entertaining. You don't watch a WCW thing. It's, oh, man, I just can't wait till Nash gets on. Or I just can't wait till Flair. You're like, oh, this is good shit, too.
I'm always looking forward to Disco Inferno.
No, fuck Disco Inferno. But he did make a splash here. Let's talk about the TV title. Do you think it still held the same relevance that it did back in the day in this era, Doug?
Up in...
Because you had names like Jericho hold it. You had names like Booker hold it.
I think it got more prestige. It was basically, it was kind of the workhorse title.
Yeah.
You know how like they treated the Intercontinental
yeah.
title? I think it was the workhorse title. We need guys to go out maybe like 5-10 minutes, put on a match. I do think it started to lose a little bit of steam in 97, unfortunately, when you have Prince Iaukea hold it.
Yeah.
But when Booker T got a hold of the belt in 98, it's like, okay, now we're cooking here. Because he was a workhorse at the time.
Because I remember Alex Wright in that division heavy, too.
Yeah.
Fighting for the TV title.
Yeah. Well, he was a TV champion. So, and there was a lot of TV champions in between 96 and 98. Started off, it was Johnny B. Badd. Then Luger. Then Regal. Prince Iaukea. Dragon. Regal got it back. Dragon won it back from him. Alex Wright. Disco. Saturn. Disco. Booker. Rick Martel, Booker, Fit Finley, Benoit won it at a house show for a day. But Finley, then Booker, then Stevie Ray held it because he had power of attorney or some stupid shit. Then Jericho, then Conan.
Yeah.
That's like your long, that's 96 through 98 right there. And no, some of those names, like some of those names are really good talent.
Yeah. They started to do that with the world title later on, but not
Yeah, in 99, 2000, yeah. But the TV title and the Cruiserweight title also was another perfect title to bounce around from guy to guy.
Yeah.
Because those matches are so dangerous that, you know, those guys, it would make sense that they didn't hold on to the title for long. I had an edition of WCW Magazine one time where people were giving their predictions for stuff that was going to happen in 1997. And Bobby Heenan wrote, he goes, I predict the Cruiserweight title changes hands 59 times because these guys can't stay on the ground. They want to, you know, go in the air and they're gonna get seriously hurt.
Yeah. I mean, there was just a lot of good stuff around this time. I want to ask Eric. Do you think Ric Flair helped or hurt the product within this 2 years?
I say, you said hurt or what?
Hurt help. Or help?
I think he helped. I think he helped the product because I think because of his name and the Four Horsemen, it was another... It was another view that the NWO had to start with, and they were a big part of the start of the NWO in 96 to the war game.
And Doug, you touch on that. Do you think the Horsemen being kind of the NWO's whipping boys helped?
I think it helped the NWO, but I think the Horsemen also, they weren't, like, happy about it.
Yeah, but do you think that it, like, was good – for viewership and stuff, because that is big names.
It is big names,
yeah.
But the problem is that, like, you know, now they're not going to take the Horsemen seriously.
Yeah.
I think that was the only thing that hurt.
Yeah.
I can agree with that, too.
Because around this time, you did have, like, you know, I believe Flair had a match for Conan. and like... he would be fighting for the U.S. belt. And we've talked about this other times too, but they didn't really utilize the Horsemen in this era, except for just kind of baby faces against the NWO.
Right. I mean, and then, like, you know, the beginning of 97 when, you know, Jarrett got in and all that, and Mongo and Jarrett, I mean, the Horsemen weren't even really aligned because when one member of the Horsemen was getting his ass beat, like when Benoit would get his ass beat by members of the Dungeon of Doom, Mongo and Jarrett would be backstage fighting about who's going to paint Deborah's toenails.
Yeah. Because I will still say one of my favorite matches on planet Earth is still that Horseman versus WCW versus NWO three-way thing.
That's being censored, right?
Yeah. I believe, right? Because Piper was the leader of WCW, right?
No, Piper was the leader of the Horsemen, believe it or not.
Who was the leader of WCW?
Luger.
Okay. But that was good as fuck.
Yeah, because it was unique.
It was.
It was unique, and, like, Luger wrestling all the members of the NWO by himself, which, that's the only thing that didn't make sense, is you make the Giant look like a schmuck, you take Rick Steiner out beforehand.
But let's talk about that, though, because how one of the most – we talked about it on this show. Maybe one of the more underrated guys of all time because of his having a poor attitude and people not really liking him. But how fucking good was Lex Luger, especially during this time? He was, if not the top, he was one of the top baby faces. And you really – like, when he had Hogan in the torture rack, when he won on that Nitro, the crowd was fucking hot.
Which,
dude,
by the way – was pushed for by Hall and Nash.
Good.
Because they wanted to do something. They wanted to do something special. It was the 100th episode of Nitro. Not only the 100th episode of Nitro, but they were going to do 3 hours.
Yeah.
For the first time ever. Big crowd, Palace of Auburn Hills, you know, suburban Detroit. So they're just like, you know what? Nash had told the story. He's like, he went up and he said, what if we give Luger the title tonight? Like, let's do something special because we're going 3 hours anyway.
Yeah.
It's the 100th episode. He goes, Luger doesn't have to get a run, but, you know, just do something special.
And it was special.
Yeah, definitely. And Hogan agreed to it. Well, Hogan knew he was going to get the belt back.
And this has to be my favorite incarnation of Luger, too, because you have so many. You have, on the later half of 98, obviously, you have Wolfpack Luger, which I'm not a huge fan of. But I did love the Wolfpack, even though it gets shit on. But you had Wolfpack Luger. You have Narcissist Luger, which is more close to his real personality. You have the All-American, you know, the next Hulk Hogan Luger. You have the NWA turn on the Horseman Luger, and he was white hot there. But there was something about him as the babyface fighting the NWO that you just really pulled for him. And I want to give it to Stevie here. Stevie, do you think that he was one of the more over babyfaces on the roster? And do you think that he really kind of helped WCW stay relevant with the NWO?
Yeah, the baby face, yeah, that like, put him over. I think he was more relevant in that era. And, yeah. Even his matches with Hogan, I mean, were great. So,
yeah,
I would say so, yeah. Absolutely.
Because I will say, I do think he got a bit lazy in 99, 2000, like everybody else. And I think he looked like another one of the old guys that didn't give a fuck. But in this era, it seemed like he really cared, and he was really over.
Yeah. And here's another thing about him winning the title, right? Sting was pissed.
Really?
Yeah, because Sting was just like, wait a minute. I thought we were building up to me beating Hogan. And for, like, the first time ever, like, Sting got jealous of Luger.
Damn.
And he pitched a fit, and Nash and Hall had to pull him aside and say, dude, one, he's your best friend, so be happy for him.
Yeah.
And two, he's hot right now.
Yeah.
Like, he's so hot right now that, like, we had to do this.
And another reason he was so over, and another reason it meant so much, because Luger had those loose connections to Sting. because they partnered so much frequently before that.
Right.
And like you, in that era, you kind of thought of Sting and you thought of Luger.
Right. And then finally, like, and Hollins' third point was, look, you're still going to do this thing with Hogan, but that's a Starrcade. That's in December. We're in August.
Yeah.
Lex isn't going to get a run. He's all right. He's okay with not getting a run. Lex just likes those one-time rubs.
Yeah, the moment. He likes the moment.
Yeah.
And this was a genuine moment. And this is probably one of my favorite Luger moments. When he has him in the torture rack and Hogan swinging that arm, and he's like, oh, I quit. And the whole crowd... And you got to imagine, it's hard for baby faces to get over against the NWO because the NWO was so cool. People love NWO. People are wearing the shirts. But everyone in the building that night was cheering for Luger.
Right. They were sort of trashing him, but that's just because they thought they were getting a fuck finish when they saw the members of the NWO come out.
Yeah, but so, they were still high pitch and excited.
Exactly. And here's the thing, and I don't agree with them doing this kind of the next year, too, when they had him beat Bret Hart on Nitro, but then Bret Hart got the belt back on Thunder.
Yeah, that was stupid.
I'm pretty sure Bret had something to do with that.
Probably. Well, let's talk about Bret Hart, though.
God.
A lot of people will say, after the Montreal Screwjob, Bret was a shell of his former self. Bret would say, and other people would also say, that WCW was not as ahead of thinking as WWE. They weren't as good creatively, and they just didn't have anything for him. I am here to ask you, Doug, which one is it? Or is it both?
Okay, so Bret's excuse for not doing anything right away was when he punched Vince.
He broke his hand. He did break his hand.
Well, he broke not just the hand, or not really the hand, a knuckle.
Yeah.
Just, you know, one knuckle, right? So, like, him saying, all right, you know, I broke my knuckle. Well, then put, like, some kind of covering or whatever on. You know, you saying that you're going to stay out of the ring for 6 weeks because you broke one knuckle on your hand is basically, like, somebody saying, oh, you know, I got a nick on my face shaving. I can't go 3 months.
Yeah.
So I think it's more of they waited to put him on TV.
Yeah.
So I think that was the problem. He does the Montreal thing. They announce the next day that he's coming.
Yeah.
So instead of having Rick Rude's ass come out on November 17th, bring Bret out.
Yeah.
And put Bret in world. All right, so here's the thing. And ever since I knew we were going to do this show, I kind of like fantasy booked, like WCW, like in my head, like how I would do it, right?
Yeah.
Like me, like being the booker.
Right.
And how I would have done it was I would have actually had Bret come in. I would have had Bret win World War III.
Oh, that would have been crazy.
Okay. I would have had Bret win World War III, and then I would have done the Starrcade finish, obviously, differently. But I would have had, like, you know, a thing where, again, just follow me here, right?
Yeah.
I would have had, and I've actually put some thought into this, I would have had Nick Patrick taken out beforehand. Like, they were going to have him be the referee, but you cut to the back where, you know, he's unconscious. So they do a drawing of WCW stars that are going to referee the match, and Scott Steiner's name gets drawn.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the match, Scott Steiner turns on Sting, Hogan leg drops, 1, 2, 3... They go to get the hell out of there. Bret and J.J. Dillon come out and said, uh-uh.
Yeah.
And then Bret, you know, starts beating up Scott Steiner. And then Rick comes out and Scott gets scared and runs away. And then Bret, and then, you know, Sting beats Hogan and all that, you know, fair submission. And, you know, we go from there. Like, that's the fantasy booking in my head. Like, you know how, like, the last, like, several weeks you'll come back and you'll hear me talking to myself?
Yeah.
Like, at work?
Yeah.
That's actually what I'm talking about in my head. I've been... I'm not lying.
I thought you were just fucking nuts.
No, I'm fantasy booking WCW this time period in my head.
What do you?
It's pretty cool.
What do you think about Randy Savage during this period?
I think it was stupid for him to join the NWO.
Really? Do you think he should have been one of the guys fighting it?
Yes.
Yes, I agree with that.
He looked cool in the colors.
No, the colors were good for him. I did not like it. I thought it was stupid. Because
you don't want to not like him.
Right.
He's just a likable guy.
Right. I mean, I do think he did wonders for some guys.
Yeah.
Diamond Dallas Page in particular.
Yes. He made DDP a star. I would agree with that. And he had some other great angles, too. And let's talk about the rise of DDP, too, because how big did he become in this era?
He became real big when they did the angle on January 13th. And I'm even giving the dates, too.
Which year?
97.
Okay.
In the Superdome in New Orleans on Nitro, after defeating Mark Starr, now I'm just showing off, and Hall and Nash come out, put the shirt on him, you know, and then he diamond cuts Scott Hall and he sends Kevin Nash to the table. He was a made man right then and there.
Yeah, the crowd loved him.
The crowd loved him. And then, like, they did a thing where they tried to tried to get him in again, and then, you know, he diamond cutted Scott Norton. And then, you know, he was still technically a heel. But then when he started turning babyface, because the fans went nuts for him. The fans technically turned him organically.
Yes.
And that was, when that happens, you're pretty much a made man. Now, I know a lot of people say, yep. Like Flair has said, you know, one of the most overrated guys in wrestling. Unless he's standing in front of him, then he praises the guy.
I think he's one of the most underrated.
I wouldn't call Paige overrated. I would call him underrated.
Yeah, that's what Eric just said.
That's what I said.
I know.
One of the most underrated, I think.
I mean, I would agree. He was heavily underrated. No, he's not the greatest in-ring worker, but you don't have to be. He oozed charisma. He was a guy that was – he's another one like Batista that got into the business when he's old. I mean, he's been in the business forever, but he got over when he was older. And – he still had good matches. Like, he's given me the best Goldberg match I've ever seen. He can wrestle some pretty good matches. Him and, I mean, he fucking made Jay Leno look good by being his tag team partner.
Yeah.
And he gave Jay Leno some legitimacy. Those tag matches with him and Leno, and, I mean, that one wasn't as good as him and Karl Malone. But that, him and Karl Malone versus Dennis Rodman and Hogan, that was a spectacle, man. That was like some of the best use of bringing celebrities in, because if you're a basketball fan, that was a big feud. Those two did not like each other, and then you bring them into wrestling, and they're two athletic guys, and seeing Karl Malone hit a diamond cutter, holy shit, that dude was a badass.
Yeah, I mean, Paige and Malone should have won that match.
Yeah, because Paige and Leno won, right? Or did they lose?
Paige and Leno did win.
Yeah.
I think it was more just, I think it was two things. Hogan did not want to put Diamond Dallas Page over.
Yeah.
That was another Hogan thing. Because Hogan felt like, okay, I just put Goldberg over. I'm not doing two jobs in 1 week. Fuck you.
Yeah.
Fuck Hogan.
Hogan was a fucking bastard. I mean, back in this time period, Hogan was a fucking bastard.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, and here's another thing, too, that I want to kind of talk about, you know, rewinding a little bit. You know, we talk about Randy Savage, right?
Yeah.
So back in January of 96, there was a clash. And the main event of the clash was Hogan and Savage versus Flair and Giant.
Yeah.
And the fit, now Savage had beaten Flair for the world title. So the next night, Hogan was going to beat Flair. Now Flair had just been, just a couple months prior, removed from his duties as head booker because he was having enough of Hogan and Savage. Mainly Hogan.
Yeah.
Because Hogan was going against everything Flair said. And, you know, Bischoff was agreeing with Hogan. So Flair's just like, all right, fuck it. Sullivan, you take this shit. So anyway, so the finish of Hogan pinning Flair at this clash, Flair went to Bischoff and said, if I'm putting Hogan over after I put Savage over last night, if I have to put Hogan over, I'm done. Like, I'll call Vince and see if he needs me. Like, I'm not fucking doing that.
Can't blame him, though. He was mistreated a lot.
Exactly. So then Bischoff went to Hulk and said, I got to change the finish. He goes, what, brother? He goes, you guys are putting Flair and Giant over. Doesn't work for me, brother. I'm not doing a job. And they couldn't beat the Giant. They couldn't pin him.
Yeah.
Not yet. So that left Savage, who had just achieved a high the night before by winning the title back.
Right.
And they said, Randy, are you going to be as, you know, uncooperative as the rest of these assholes? Oh, no. He did the job.
Yeah.
Because Randy knew what was best for business.
Yeah.
I mean, what really would have been best for business, I think, for, you know, Randy, especially since, you know, Randy could never get over on the guy, was probably running Hogan over with your car and then dumping his body in the river.
Right.
Which I'm sure he would have liked to have done. But it just shows, and again, you know, we're talking about people that, you know, want to cooperate and want to do the job and want to do what's best for business. Randy Savage was one of those guys.
Yeah.
Even if it was at his own expense.
Yeah.
Which 99% of the time it was.
Yeah.
Flair didn't like to do business. Although Flair, you know, you could argue, though, too, Flair did business.
He did do a lot.
He did do a lot, but it was getting to the point, especially here, where it's just like, haven't I done enough for you fucking assholes?
Yeah, he was starting to get pissed off because they weren't using him properly.
Yeah, which is understandable when you got a guy like Flair. Let's talk about the Giant. The Giant, do you think he wasn't quite there yet, or do you think he's kind of underrated for his stuff in WCW? Because he wasn't part of a lot of big moments that people don't seem to talk about anymore.
Here's the thing. When he was athletic, when he was between 450 and 475.
The drop kick off the top rope was nuts.
Yeah. When he was doing that stuff, and yeah, he was so very much underrated.
Yeah.
You know, because he would do the choke slam, but he would also do like this couple other. I mean, when he first started, and all he did was a choke slam to the point where like he'd get in the ring with guys that looked like they could beat him. So yeah. Jimmy Hart actually had to stand on the apron, distract the guys so the Giant could just choke slam him right away so he didn't look weak.
Yeah.
Which I hated. By the way, around that period of time, Jimmy Hart was just getting fat. But like then, like he started doing the drop kicks and stuff because he was a very agile guy.
Yeah, he was a basketball player.
Yeah. Then he he started getting fat. And I got to talk about this, the Nash Giant incident from Sold Out. In 98.
Yeah.
Now.
Which I thought underrated storyline, by the way, the real Giant.
Yeah, exactly. That was a real storyline, and it was real cool. And the match between the two actually was pretty good.
Yeah.
Until that moment. But here's the thing. Kevin Nash jackknifed the Giant at Super Brawl 7, the February before. But that's when Giant was 450. Here, Giant was about 500, 525.
Already?
So
wow.
So when Nash picked him up, that's when Nash is just like, he should have laid off the donuts. Like, cause Nash couldn't pick him up, and that's, I don't think that's Nash. I mean, well, it's whoever called for the powerbomb's fault.
Yeah. He's too big.
Well,
yeah. You cannot powerbomb a fat guy.
Yeah.
So Nash just, unfortunately, he lost control. So I don't necessarily blame Nash. I blame for whoever. And if it was Nash that called for the spot, he was stupid. But
well,
go ahead, Stevie.
When he powerbombed the Giant, didn't he, like, hurt his back there for a minute?
No, when he powerbombed him at that sold-out pay-per-view, he almost broke the Giant's neck.
No, I think he did it before, though, like on a Nitro or something.
No,
I'm not
sure. He did it at the Super Brawl, at Super Brawl 7, and yeah, it looked like he hurt his back. But he was still
right,
able
yeah,
to do it.
That's what I was talking about.
Yeah. He was still able to do it without hurting the Giant.
Well, he barely picked him up. I mean, you know?
Yeah.
Because it didn't look like he didn't look like he had him up that good.
He had him up good enough to where the power bombs looked good at Super Brawl.
Yeah.
Right.
And sold out, he didn't have him up at all.
Right. I do want to touch on the tag team division.
Oh, that was a great division.
Because to me, it's probably one of the better tag team divisions in history. You have the Nasty Boys. You have the Steiners. You have Hall and Nash, you could say. You had Public Enemy. You had the Harlem Heat.
Right.
Keep going. You had the French Canadians. You had Balcaninos.
Right.
I wouldn't really put them in the top tier, but you had a lot of great tag teams.
The Blue Bloods at one point.
And it seemed like the Cruiserweight division, it seemed like its own living, breathing division that was separate from everything else that was going on.
Yeah.
What was your favorite tag team in that division, Stevie?
Harlem Heat.
Why?
Why Harlem Heat?
Yes, sir. I agree.
Because if you look at them in that tag team division, they were the hottest team in the WCW. Even when they had the belts like in 94, I mean, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It seemed like they were unbeatable in that era.
Yeah, they were dope. And it was really the rise of Booker's too.
It was the rise of Booker.
Right, yeah.
No, they had a tremendous amount of teams. And even like some of the makeshift teams they put together, and WCW was actually, again, it goes back to my point earlier of, okay, well, we want a tag match, but I don't see any of the teams, standing, here right now. Hugh and Conan, you two are standing together. You're a team. Get out there. Okay, we need opponents for them. All right. Where the fuck am I taking? Oh, Psychosis, Alex. You guys are here. You get out there. You're teaming tonight.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that actually was the opening match of a Nitro, which is why I brought that up. But some of those makeshift tag teams that they did stick. Like, there was, like, Norton and Bagwell. That's
Fire and Ice for a little bit.
Yeah, Fire and Ice. They were a good team. Norton and the only thing I didn't like about Norton and Bagwell, I don't like Scott Norton.
Yeah.
Because, like, yes, I get it. He's a big guy and all that.
He's short.
Well, he's a big, muscular guy and all that shit, and, one of the toughest guys. But, you could stand to do a couple of jobs.
Yeah.
Like, when you won't fucking put over Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah.
Or, like, when they have this whole thing where you have to beat where, you know, you're wrestling in Ray Trailer 3 weeks in a row, but you win every match.
Yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
You get to do it, God. Do a fucking job.
Yeah, because people still don't talk about him because he sucks.
Yeah. I mean, and I swear to God, like, we'll, I'll get into this obviously more now, or more, you know, when we do the comparison in a couple weeks, but I swear to God, him and Doc Gallows are almost the same fucking person. They're the least athletic members of their fucking tag team. They're the ones that both suck the most. And yet, you know, they get more wins. Fuck you. Like, go back to arm wrestling, Norton, you fat piece of shit.
Now, as we're getting towards the end here, I want to talk about the rise of Goldberg.
Yeah.
How big of a deal was that, Eric? And do you think that that really helped them through, like, 98 and stuff and stay big? Because they were known for having a lot of WWE guys, but this was a homegrown superstar that people cling to.
I was into him. I'm not a big Goldberg fan now, obviously, because he sucks. But I thought it was entertaining. I thought him beating Hogan in Atlanta, Georgia, in his hometown, the Georgia Dome, was great. I thought that was one of the biggest events in WCW history. That crowd was electric. It was one of the loudest crowds in WCW history, at least I think. In 98, he was a big star in wrestling. Him and Austin.
Hell yeah. I'd agree. I think Goldberg was very important to the company. And my kind of final question here, because there's never going to be enough that we can say about this era. It was great. Watch this. If you're a pro wrestling fan and you want some good shit to watch, watch Nitros from 96 to 98. Check out Thunder even. The first year was good. But I do want to ask you, Doug, closing out here. Do you think that the NWO got ruined by too many guys, or is that a wrong statement? And that's a wrong
piece. I think they got diluted. I think they got diluted because of adding too many guys. Now, yes, some of those guys I think did kind of flourish in there, like Bagwell. I mean, and I know we didn't talk a lot about Buff Bagwell in this episode, and probably for good reason. But Bagwell was another guy that I think he's overrated but underrated at the same time.
Right.
That makes sense, yeah.
Okay. And for anybody that doesn't understand that, just think about it a little bit and you'll finally get it. But, like, I mean, you had him who kind of flourished as, you know, being added into the NWO. Conan, I think, you know, him being put in the NWO was good for him. Kurt Hennig, I think, belonged in the NWO.
Yeah, he was a good dickhead.
Yeah.
That heel turn in that War Games was still.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
That was awesome. 97, right?
Yeah.
It was fucked up. Yeah. I was, as a kid, I think I cried. I was very upset to see them do that to Rick, and he's bleeding. I mean, Rick always bled, but still.
Yeah.
They're beating the shit out of him. Because when Kurt was like, because that promo with Arn, he poured his heart out when he's like, you get my spot.
Yeah.
And it's like, that was one of the best Arn promos. And then they fucking fucked him over and then ripped it off the next week. And it's like, Jesus Christ, dude, these guys are brutal. I know that gets shit talk, but I think it was good heel moves making fun of Arn the next week in his retirement and shit.
Yeah. You know, I've never actually watched that full Nitro.
Because it pisses you off that bad?
Yeah.
And I understand it does have a, but I do think his heels, it was great.
Yeah.
They should have got their come up.
Which Nitro is that?
But, like, that's also the same episode of Nitro where Hogan beat up J.J. Dillon. Because J.J. Dillon said he was going to try to sign a match between Hogan and Sting. So Hogan and Bischoff beat him up.
That was Nitro after Fall Brawl?
No, a couple weeks before Fall Brawl 97.
Oh, yeah.
The Nitro with the Horseman, with the Arn Anderson parody on it, Eric, was September 1st,
1997. Okay. Thank you.
No problem. But, no, to answer your question, I think they got diluted with having too many members, but I do think there was quite a few members in that NWO that belong there.
Yes.
The only problem is that when they went to, like, the black and the white in, like, summer 98, and you had, well, summer, fall 98, and your main members were Stevie Ray and Horace Hogan.
Yeah.
I think that's where you can kind of draw the line. And go, okay, this is horseshit.
You should have stopped the Wolfpack.
Yeah. And as much as I enjoyed the Wolfpack, like, that's when you really saw it. It's like, damn, this is all they got is NWO type shit.
Yeah.
But my final question closing out, and we will do a feud retrospective of Wolfpack and Black and White for the people that are screaming right now that we didn't talk enough about it. And there's a lot of other retrospectives that we'll do within this era.
And trust me, there's also going to be, you know, when we're able to get to them, I will do some history lessons on some of the guys that were,
yes,
that were here, and we'll focus mainly on their participation in this era.
Yes.
And I will schedule them probably within like the next few months, because right now, you know, we're kind of booked.
Yeah. But my final question to all three of you gentlemen, I'll start with Stevie. Is this, if not one of, is this the best era in wrestling?
By far the best era in wrestling.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
Now I'm going to give it to Eric. Oh, no. Go ahead, Stevie. Go ahead.
Even as a wrestling fan, by far the best.
Okay. Very good. Eric, is this the best era in wrestling?
It's the second best. I still have Attitude Era at the top because that's the era I really got into wrestling.
Like, yes, sir. But what does this era mean to you? And what's your final thoughts on this era?
My final thoughts are it made WCW. It was the boom period of WCW. And unfortunately, towards the end, that's when it was the doom period. So it was a boom, and then it was a doom, if that makes sense.
All right, Doug, I'm finishing off on you. Your final thoughts on this era, and is this the greatest era in professional wrestling?
That's such a loaded question. I will say that this is the most entertaining era in wrestling to me. And, you know, Attitude Era was kind of cool and all that. And Attitude Era had some, like, great moments. And, but to me, this is, okay, this era really started the Monday Night Wars. And this is actually one of my favorite eras to go back and watch. I love watching WCW 96 or 98.
Yes.
I do too.
I will, just like I love watching WWF 88 through 92. So when I get the choice between those two eras, first of all, it's hard for me to pick because, like I said, I love both of those eras. Those are my favorite. But 96 through 98, like, it always seems to be like my go-to.
Yeah.
And my final thoughts on this are, if you look at everything they were able to accomplish, yes, they had a lot of people on the roster, but they had the shows to back it up. When you have enough TV shows and have enough talent for those TV shows, you know, you're going to be you're going to be in a good spot.
Yeah.
So, and it's like, and again, we'll get into this in the comparison show.
Yes.
But AEW is kind of along those same lines right now.
Yes.
Which is, you know, why I said, you know, because I'm the original one that said, oh my God, you know, AEW right now is like WCW 96 or 98. They're so hot, but unfortunately, you know, it could fizzle if they don't manage it right. Unfortunately, WCW didn't manage it right.
Yeah.
And that's because of egos involved.
Yes.
And unfortunately, AEW has those egos right now in the form of Team Fu Manchu. The Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and Adam Cole, you know, he's got a nice Fu Manchu going on. And those two bald-headed idiots, Gallows and Anderson, and the man that fluffs their Garfields in Don Callis. But, like, as far as...
And Cody a little bit, too. And Cody a little bit. And I'm Cody Mark.
I don't think he's got an ego. I disagree.
He doesn't have an ego, or else he would have won Wednesday night.
Yeah,
but we'll talk about
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
That's all you need to say. And we'll talk about AEW next week.
Yeah.
But right now, WCW is just it was a good place for guys to work. Because whether it was at Center Stage in Atlanta, Universal or Disney in Orlando, or whatever crowds they worked, you know, all around the country,
yeah.
People got to see it, and these guys got to showcase their talent on national television, which is, by the way, which was the goal for people to be on national TV.
Right.
Not just to be on some local station, you know, working a bingo hall.
Yeah.
You know, like ECW or like the territories back in the day. It was you wanted to be on national TV, and WCW provided that for a lot of guys. I mean, and you even had like some of like the oddball like guys coming in there and doing matches, like Jimmy Graffiti.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, is Bob Backlund's son. For anybody that didn't know that, that's a piece of trivia for you. And, like, guys, I mean, look at what Billy Kidman.
Yeah.
All right? Came in 96, weighed about 75 pounds. He was so fucking skinny. Look what he became.
Right.
All right? There was just so many guys, and there's so many guys that we really didn't mention, obviously, you know, because we're running low on time here. But some of these, I love it because of the variety of talent that we got. The Blue Bloods, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
All right, the Blue Bloods actually, I'll say the Blue Bloods actually gave Bobby Eaton a breath of life in his career.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Which, by the way, he had fun doing.
You could tell.
Yeah, because he was just like, he's like, I have no idea how the hell I act like an Englishman, but... You know, fuck it. Let's give it a shot. They're doing something with me. it was cool.
Absolutely. This period, I think one way to describe it is cool. All right, everybody. Make sure to check with us next week for our AEW retrospective, and we're going to finish the trilogy.
I can't wait for that.
After that. And we got a lot of cool stuff coming up. Keep checking with us. Doug, Eric, Stevie, this was a pleasure, and it was nice talking about one of my favorite companies.
It was nice. Yep. This is a good thing to do, these company retrospectives. I really like these.
Me too.
But that company compares.
Everybody have a good weekend.
Yeah. But yeah.
Thanks, Eric. You have a good one too.
But yeah, no, the company retrospective next week with AEW, and then the comparison in 2 weeks. That's really going to put a bow on everything, I think.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Later.
Later. See you tomorrow, though.